Well, brethren, as we approach the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, the biblical story, the first few chapters of Exodus, looms large in our thoughts. We read through it, we read over it, we go through it to better understand it, to remind ourselves of all that went on, to learn the lessons that Israel maybe didn't learn along the way. And we look at the poor Egyptians. Why did God treat the Egyptians so badly? You know, that's how some people look at this story. Why did he mete out 10 plagues on them? There are those who say, I can't be a Christian. If you're going to worship a God that pours out plagues on people, I don't want anything to do with that God. Were they, the Egyptians, the worst people in the world? The worst that the world had ever seen, frankly. And as a result, deserved these 10 plagues more so than any other human group on earth? I mean, wouldn't 3 or 4 have been enough? Today what we're going to do is examine the plagues that God poured out upon Egypt and come to understand them better, I hope, and also, more importantly, understand what the point of the plagues is for us. Now, of course, when someone says, those poor Egyptians, what did they do to deserve these plagues? We could also ask the question, poor humans, what did they do to deserve not getting special blessings from God? You see, the argument is the same regardless. Let's take a look at some of those. What does the Bible reveal to us that God says about why he was going to deliver the plagues upon Egypt? It was, in one sense, a type of what God will eventually pour out on all humanity. There is a time coming in the future when plagues are mentioned again. They are in the future of humanity's experience. There were apparently a number of reasons. We might find 5 actually listed here in the book of Exodus. 5 reasons that God says he would pour out plagues upon Egypt. The first one was this: to deliver his people from slavery. To deliver his people from slavery. Notice, if you would, in Exodus chapter 3, beginning in verses 7 and 8. We'll just read there. This is the time when Moses was going through the wilderness with the flocks of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he saw the burning bush. And he was so curious about how this bush could burn and burn and burn and yet not be engulfed in the burn up to ashes. It continued to burn. So he walked over, and of course God said, take off your shoes. I'm here. This makes it holy ground. And the place you're standing, you need to show respect and honor to. The Lord said in verse 7, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt. God's people from time to time will be under oppression. And they certainly were here. My people who are in Egypt, I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. If your Bible's like mine, you probably have that underlined or marked. God knows what we go through. He is aware. He loves us, so he is aware. I know their sorrows. The word literally is, I know their pain. Ever heard someone say, I feel your pain? Sometimes you wonder whether that's sincere. But yeah, God is very sincere. I can understand your pain. So, verse 8, I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, to deliver his people from slavery, and to bring them up from that land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, the Hittites and the Jebusites. So all of these people were squatters on the property, we might say, and God was going to displace them and give his people freedom from their slavery. Certainly, as we keep the days of unleavened bread, we're reminded of this lesson as well, that God is in the process of delivering us from spiritual slavery. Notice down in verse 19. Verse 19, "But I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go, no, not even by a mighty hand." Two plagues wasn't going to be enough. Three, four, five, six, seven weren't going to be enough. Not by a mighty hand. "So I will stretch out my hand to strike Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in its midst. After that, he will let you go." The stubbornness of Pharaoh, symbolic in one sense of the stubbornness of Satan the devil, would require the direct intervention of God to allow God's people freedom. And we can be, of course, very thankful that God has stayed the hand of Satan in our lives and allowed us to escape from spiritual slavery into spiritual freedom. Turn over a few pages to Exodus chapter 6. Exodus chapter 6 in verse 1. Exodus 6 in verse 1. "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. For with a strong hand he will let them go, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land. It will come to the point that Pharaoh will release the people because God's strong hand.'" And so he'll push them out. He'll be so frightened, so afraid, so angry, so upset that he'll push the people out. Verse 5, chapter 6 and verse 5. "And I have also heard the groaning of the children of Israel, whom the Egyptians keep in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant." What covenant is he referring to? Well, the covenant, the agreement he made with Abraham to give Abraham not only the descendants, but the land in which the descendants would live. So one of the reasons that God says he gave the plagues to Pharaoh and the Egyptians was to deliver his people from slavery. Certainly we learn other lessons from this as well. We certainly can see that, boy, to take advantage of others is certainly not a good idea. To oppress others, not a good idea. God sees those things. He says elsewhere, "When you oppress the fatherless or the widow, I see." God understands these things, and he will deliver his people in every way possible. Let's go to a second reason that God says he poured out plagues upon the Egyptians. And that is to answer Pharaoh's question. To answer Pharaoh's question. Well, what question was that? Turn with me to Exodus chapter 5, back a page. Chapter 5 and verse 2. Here's Pharaoh's question. God poured out plagues to answer this question. Pharaoh said, chapter 5 and verse 2, "Who is Yahweh?" Who's God? Who is Yahweh? Why will God pour out plagues in the future? To answer the same question. Who is God? Our world today does not understand who God is. Some think of him as a trinity. Some think of him as a mirage. Some think of him as a spirit cloud. Others think of him as a Buddha or a cow or all kinds of crazy things. Pharaoh said, "Who is the Eternal, that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know Yahweh, nor will I let Israel go." Same attitude is in the world today. Who is God that I should be obedient to him? That I should not work on Saturday where I can make a good dollar? Why would I do that? Why would I not eat pigs when they taste so good? Who is God that I should be obedient to him? Listen to him. Turn to chapter 7. Chapter 7 in verse 5. Pharaoh repeatedly seems to be asking this question. Well, who is God? Who is Yahweh? Today we would say, who is really the God of the Bible? Exodus 7 in verse 5. God says, "And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Eternal." How would they know that? How will people today come to that conclusion? It's not by what we say. Moses said all these things, and Pharaoh simply discarded them. We preach the gospel today, and people simply discard it if they pay any attention to it at all. What will it take for them? The same thing it took for the Egyptians. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Eternal. When? When I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring out the children of Israel from among them. So it's not until they received the plagues that they would even listen to God. And we live in a world today that is rapidly, if it's not already there, of the same attitude and approach. I don't know if you saw the latest news about Mr. Potato Head. Mr. Potato Head has gone gender neutral. No longer will he be called Mr. Potato Head. Now he's just, it's just Potato Head. You can't have him, you smack your head. Are you serious? I mean, even the potato has to be a gender neutral thing. It seems to me potatoes always were, but nonetheless. We have a world who simply discards what God says. God says, I've created them male and female so that they might leave father and mother, cleave to one another, and live a type of my family. Can't be done without the male-female circumstance. Sad, but true. Let's go over to chapter 8. Chapter 8 and verse 22. Chapter 8 and verse 22. And in that day, I will set apart the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there. Why? In order that you may know that I am the Eternal in the midst of the land. Who is God? He's the Eternal that owns the land. He controls all of these things. So Pharaoh's question, who is God? He's the creator. He's the owner of all the land. Now the Egyptians, as you might remember, we'll talk about this in a few minutes, had all kinds of gods. There was god of dust, there was god of mud, there was god of dirt, there was god of agriculture, there was god of water, there was god of cloud, there was god of mist. It goes on and on and on. Every conceivable thing had its own god. God is saying, no, I am God in the midst of the land. I own all of this. I control all of this. So Pharaoh's question would be answered that this God is over all conceived gods. Exodus chapter 9 in verse 14. Exodus chapter 9 in verse 14. For at this time I will send all my plagues to your very heart. The 10 plagues would be required to cut to Pharaoh's heart. And on your servants, and on your people, that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. So why did God pour out 10 plagues upon the Egyptians? Well, it's the only way it would get to the heart. And it would show who God is. The Egyptians would see. Now there's a third reason that God also says he poured out plagues upon Egypt, and that is to show Israel who God is. To show Israel who God is. Remember, the Israelites had a very limited understanding of who God is. They had to be taught what? What was one of the first things God taught them in the wilderness? After he taught them who he was, he taught them the Sabbath day because they hadn't been keeping it. So they had to learn a lot about God as well. And when you first learn that God is in charge, God has complete control of everything, He owns everything, including me, then there's a desire to listen. What does this God want me to do? Turn back to chapter 6 again. Chapter 6 in verse 7. One of the reasons God poured out so many plagues upon the Egyptians was to confirm to the Israelites that He was the true God, that He was more powerful than all the gods of Egypt. Because no doubt, with 400 years in Egypt, Israel very likely might have had the same understanding that many ancient peoples did, that their God must be weaker than the other gods because they're on top and we're on the bottom. They're the masters, we're the slaves. So their gods must be more powerful than ours. So Israel itself had to be taught who God is. God would show that He had total power. So chapter 6 in verse 7. I will take you as my people, and I will be your God. There's at least some indication there that He was not their God up to that point, at least for all. Remember, there was a time that Moses had to say, who's on my side? Who's on the Lord's side? Who's on Yahweh's side? Come stand with me. The Levites came over, a lot of other people didn't. So they had to learn this through the power of the plagues. I will be your God. Then you shall know that I am the eternal God who brings you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And He talks about how He'll give them the land that He promised to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob. So Israel itself had to learn who God is. Chapter 10. Chapter 10 and verse 2. Chapter 10 and verse 2, and that you may tell in the hearing of your son and your son's son the mighty things I have done in Egypt and my signs which I have done among them, that you may know that I am the Eternal, that you may know. Tell your son, tell your son's son. It's been interesting working with our grandson over the period of time here. We will dearly miss that. But last year, as we were nearing the days of unleavened bread, we were going over the plagues, and we had a little kit that one of the families in Akron, Kenton had put together to help the children learn these things. It had little frogs in there and things, and one of the things in there was Cheerios. And we learned that if you lick a Cheerio on one side, it sticks to their little hairless arms. And so these were the boils that were all over. So we stuck them all over him on his arms. And so you get an idea of what the boils were all about. But tell your son and tell your son's son about the mighty things that God has done in Egypt. Why? That you may know that I am the Eternal. So to show Israel who God is, these plagues were necessary as well. There's a fourth reason. There's a fourth reason. To show that the earth belongs to God. To show that the earth belongs to God. As we said, the Egyptians have all these various gods. We'll talk about some of them in a few minutes. Exodus chapter 9 and verse 16. While the Egyptians had all these various gods, there is one God over all. Now when we say, you know, there are Egyptians and other cultures had gods of the wind and gods of the thunder and gods of the clouds and gods of this and gods of that, we cannot discount the fact that the creation was administered by Satan and his cohorts. And they may have had responsibility over various portions like this. So we certainly wouldn't discount those possibilities. At the same time, there is a God over all. There is the Lord of Lords, the King of Kings. Exodus chapter 9 and verse 16. But indeed, for this purpose I have raised you up. Interesting. Why did Israel exist? Because they were so special? No. They were raised up to show God's power. Indeed, for this purpose I have raised you up, that I may show my power in you, and that my name may be declared in all the earth. Part of the reason God pours out plagues upon Egypt is to show that all the earth belongs to Him. Whether it's water, whether it's sunlight, whether it's crops, whether it's insects, whether it's livestock, whether it's people, everything belongs to God. Notice down in verse 29, Moses said to him, this is speaking to Pharaoh, "As soon as I have gone out of the city, I will spread out my hands to the eternal. The thunder will cease and there will be no more hail. Why? That you may know that the earth is the eternal's." That God has absolute power. That He can see us through any circumstance. There's a fifth reason listed in the scripture for the plagues poured out upon Egypt. And that is to execute judgment on, quote, all the gods of Egypt. To execute judgment on all the gods of Egypt. You see, it wasn't enough to show that there was a powerful God called Yahweh. What also had to be understood is that none of the other things worshipped as God had any power whatsoever. Turn back to Exodus chapter 12. Exodus 12 in verse 12. "For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Eternal. I am Yahweh. So against all the gods of Egypt, I will execute judgment." When you cannot protect your firstborn, whether it's the firstborn of your animals or your firstborn in your own household, it shows that God has power over all. And that all the gods of Egypt would be judged as incapable and inferior to the great God of the universe. Let's leave Exodus for a moment. Turn to Numbers chapter 33. There's a similar statement made here. Numbers 33. Numbers 33 is a atlas, we might say. In the old days, we would have said it's a triptych. But I'm not sure they make those things anymore. Now that you have GPS on your phone, you just ask where the nearest gas station is, and it takes you there. Here's the triptych. Here's where they travel. But there's an interesting statement in verse 4. "For the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn, whom the Eternal had killed among them. Also, on their gods, the Eternal had executed judgments." Why did they feel, the Egyptians feel, that they were so strong and so powerful? Well, because their gods protected them. Their gods gave them victory. Their gods gave them prosperity. So God was executing judgment on all of those aspects, that none of the things that they looked to could provide what they needed. So, understanding why God poured out the plagues upon Egypt helps us also to look forward to a time in the future when similar plagues are going to be poured out, and practically for the same reasons. Plagues will be poured out to deliver God's people from slavery. Plagues will be poured out to answer the question, who is God? Why should I obey Him? To show us who God is, to show the earth belongs to God, and to execute judgments on all the gods that the world holds dear. With that in mind, let's look at the plagues specifically and how they could have humbled the various gods of Egypt, and why humanity will have to have each of these things taken away before they're willing to turn to the true God. Let's go to Exodus chapter 7. The first plague, as you recall, was the rivers turning to blood. Exodus chapter 7 in verse 16. Throughout human history, control of major waterways is a source of tremendous power. It's a source of plenty. It's a source of commerce and business, traveling, colonization, etc. Chapter 7 and verse 16. God speaking through Moses, "You shall say to him, the eternal God of the Hebrews has sent me to you, saying, let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness. But indeed, until now, you would not hear. Thus says the Lord, by this you shall know that I am the Eternal. Behold, I will strike the waters which are in the river with the rod that is in my hand, and they shall be turned to blood." Of course, the fish die, the river stinks, and water is undrinkable. The first plague was directed against the Nile itself, which the Egyptians worshipped as their source of life. And as it was their source of life. This plague confirmed not just the guardian of the Nile, but Hapi, the spirit of the Nile, personified as the waters itself, and the god of fertility. All were being judged by this plague. So by turning the Nile into blood and killing the fish who were supposed to be protected by two other of Egyptians' gods, Moses was not only shaming these Egyptian objects of worship, but showing that sustenance comes only from the true God. He has control. Yahweh has control over all of that. In chapter 8, in verse 1, the Eternal spoke to Moses, plague number 2. "Go to Pharaoh and say to him, thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me." Now pause for a second before we go on to plague number 2. Remember what one of the great plagues of Revelation is set to be? 1/3 of the fresh water being made unfit to drink. Again, we depend on these things. Again, for those of us who are city dwellers, we expect that when we turn the faucet, push it, or if you're really modern, tap it, water will come streaming out, water that's fit to drink. We assume that that's the case. I'll tell you, folks in Texas got a recent wake-up call. When you turn the water and nothing happens, turn the faucet, nothing comes out. Where do we go for water? So one of the very basic sustenances of life, God shows that He controls, and He will have to use that spigot, we might say, turning it off in the future to help mankind come to understand what they're doing and how He is the true God. So Exodus chapter 8 and verse 2 now, the second plague. "But if you refuse to let them go, I will smite all your territory with frogs." And you think, oh, big deal, frog, that's really scary. Oh, it's not at all, until there are billions of them. Then do you want frogs in everything and all around? The immense number of frogs shamed the Egyptian goddess Heket, the symbol of good crops which come from the waters of the Nile. She's also the goddess of childbirth, and she's usually depicted as a woman with a frog's head. Interesting. Isis, the fertility goddess, frogs were sacred to the Egyptians because they came from the Nile, so they were seen as very important. But these goddesses were impotent to protect the Egyptians. So instead of a symbol of life springing out of the Nile, they now were symbols of rotting death, as these frogs were everywhere and then died. Now, as we know, interestingly, the magicians could produce more frogs. And of course, you say, well, great, that's just what we need, more frogs. Much better miracle would have been to remove the frogs, but they were powerless to do that. So can you just imagine almost a smile on God's face allowing these demon-inspired Egyptian priests and things to, oh yeah, I want to show that anybody can, yeah, go ahead, make some more frogs. He must have been laughing to think that that might have been the case. So that's not very helpful along the way. So they were not allowed to reverse those plagues, that plague, but they were allowed to add to it. You'd think just the opposite. So a bit of irony in God's sense of humor, I think. The third plague in chapter 8, verse 16, the third plague of lice, gnats or mosquitoes. Exodus 8, in verse 16. So the Eternal said to Moses, "Say to Aaron, stretch out your rod and strike the dust of the land so that it may become lice throughout all the land of Egypt." And again, the word lice very likely is gnats or mosquitoes. "And they did so, for Aaron stretched out his hand with a rod and struck the dust of the earth, and it became lice on man and beast. And dust of the land became lice throughout the land of Egypt." So regardless of what this pest was, whether it was actual lice like head lice or body lice, which are very, never had them, but reading about them, it's just a ghastly kind of a infection that very difficult to get rid of. So the gods of the dust of the earth were made fun of, we might say, or shown to be powerless to protect the Egyptians. Matthew Henry, in his commentary, says that lice were small, despicable, inconsiderable animals, and yet by their vast numbers they rendered a sore plague to the Egyptians. God could have plagued them with lions or bears or wolves or with vultures or other birds of prey, but he chose to do so by these tiny, contemptible instruments. Imagine that. I don't know about you, but bugs crawling on me are not something that I really appreciate. Interesting, a few years ago I was at a location. Friend said, "Well, we got the perfect turkey hunting location." So I went there. It's kind of this swamp. And the mosquitoes were just I have never in my entire existence been in a place where there's a swarm of mosquitoes around you all the time, just buzzing, and you're hoping you're covered up and protected. And I realized probably a bit of what the Egyptians must have gone through. So I said, "This is the plague of the mosquitoes. I'm leaving." Any turkey that's in the area will have its blood drained in 30 seconds. There's just no way this is going to happen. I'm out of here. But Baal was the god of the storms of the sky. So when all these lice start dropping out of the sky, coming up out of the dust that blows brings these bugs or whatever they might have been, lice, gnats, mosquitoes, certainly showed God's power in that regard. Now again, if you're an Egyptian, your source of water was turned to blood. The goddess that's supposed to produce wonderful things produces nothing but dead piles of frogs, and now lice are crawling all over, or mosquitoes biting, or swarms of mosquitoes and things. I mean, that swarm of mosquitoes that I was a part of was worse than black flies in Minnesota in the summertime. And those no-see-ums are mean little things. Man, oh man. You get in a swarm of those, and I mean, they draw blood when they bite, and they are not pleasant at all. So imagine that kind of thing. If you're an Egyptian, certainly we would turn to God in that circumstance, but they did not. So why were 10 plagues required? In part because of the stubbornness of the people. Exodus chapter 8 and verse 20 then. Exodus 8 and verse 20. The next plague of flies. "And the Eternal said to Moses, rise early in the morning, stand before Pharaoh as he comes out to the water. Then say to him, thus says the Eternal, let my people go that they may serve me, or else if you will not let my people go, I will send swarms on you." That's literally what the word is, swarms. So the Hebrew word Arab, swarms, again the translators add flies, swarms of flies on you and your servants and on your people, into your houses, the houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms, and also the ground on which they stand. In other words, everywhere, inside, outside, these swarms would be there. So, whether it was a plague of flies, others say, well, it may be the scarab, the little beetle, the dung beetle in essence. The Egyptians had as a part of their religion. And again, I wonder sometimes if God's sense of humor isn't a part of this. Since the sun is a disc and the little dung beetle, the scarab, rolls cow dung or other animal dung into a ball and then buries it, their idea was that the god Amun-Ra was this scarab that pushed this ball, this bright ball, across the sky during the day. You think, that's a pretty sophisticated belief, you know. But nonetheless, this plague of flies or swarms, whatever kind of flying insect it was, certainly would have been something that that should have humbled the Egyptians along the way. And it's at this point, as we read earlier, that God puts this division between Israel and the Egyptians. And none of the rest of the plagues actually affect the Egyptians, I should say, affect the Israelites while they're affecting the Egyptians. Number five, in chapter 9, verses 1 and 2, chapter 9, verses 1 and 2, the Eternal said to Moses, "Go unto Pharaoh, tell him, thus says the Eternal God of the Hebrews, let my people go, that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let them go and still hold them, behold, the hand of the Eternal will be on your cattle in the field." Food supply now being affected. "On the horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, on the oxen, on the sheep, a very severe pestilence." So this fifth plague on the livestock, which would have provided food and milk and clothing and transportation, was a direct attack on Apis, the bull god, and Nevis, the bull god, a symbol of fertility, as well as Hathor, the cow goddess. She was the mother goddess. And of course, Isis was the queen of gods, and she wore cow's horns on her head. So all of these were shown to be imposters during this plague. They could not protect. And again, will God in the future have to affect people's ability to make a living, people's ability to survive? Well, you look at the plagues that come in the future, and while it's not specifically the same as these 10, the effect is certainly the same. Effect on people's health, people's ability to make a living, people's ability to eat, to survive, etc. Number six, Exodus 9 in verse 8. "So the Eternal said to Moses and Aaron, take for yourselves handfuls of ashes from a furnace." These furnaces would have been what was used to make bricks by the Israelites. "Take handfuls of ashes from a furnace and let Moses scatter it toward the heavens in the sight of Pharaoh. And it will become fine dust in all the land of Egypt. And it will cause boils that break out in sores on man and beast throughout all the land of Egypt." So now people's physical health is being affected because they refuse to acknowledge the true God. So it showed the impetus of any of the gods of magic and healing that the Egyptians held. Even the magicians of Egypt broke out. Verse 11, "The magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boils were on the magicians and on all the Egyptians." So their physical health. The god of healing, Imhotep, was again shown to be incompetent to take care of this situation. He could do nothing to help the Egyptians. Let's go on to number 7, chapter 9 and verse 22. Chapter 9 and verse 22, "Then the Eternal said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be hail in all the land of Egypt, on man, on beast, and on every herb of the field throughout the land of Egypt." Again, the food supply being destroyed. Moses stretched out his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire darted to the ground, more like lightning, things like that. And the Eternal rained hail on the land of Egypt. There was hail and fire mingled with the hail, so very heavy that there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. Now again, is he just talking about these massive bolts of thunder causing fire? Or was there literal fire with the hail? It would be an interesting miracle, would it not, that you have frozen balls of hail smashing everything in sight, and yet fire with it as well, burning what isn't smashed by the... Maybe that's what was going on. Maybe Cecil B. DeMille had it right, that there was burning hail. I tend to think it was hail frozen with thunder and lightning causing all this fire as well. Bottom line is that the goddess of heaven and sky, who was considered the mother of their chief deity, the sun god Ra, was completely incompetent. In fact, one Egyptian myth was that as the sun came across the sky, this mother goddess would eat the sun and then birth him again in the morning. Again, a little bit ironic to say the least, especially if you remember back to that being a scarab beetle pushing a ball of dung, and it just doesn't make much sense, does it? But again, these were things that evolved over thousands of years of idolatry. So nonetheless, there was no way to prevent the sky itself from harming the individuals. So again, you'll begin to see that everything that human beings tend to lean on, everything human beings tend to depend upon, God is pulling out the stops, pulling the rug out, we might say, from under people's feet. So when we say, well, how could God be so cruel as to send these plagues? Well, how could a parent be so cruel as to put their child in time out? How could a parent be so cruel as to maybe discipline their child? Maybe even a little corporal punishment here and there. How could a parent be so cruel to do that? Well, it's out of love for the child, out of dedication to that child, wanting what is best for them. God is not pouring these things out because he hates the Egyptians. He loves them and wants them to repent, wants them to do what is right. The eighth plague, Exodus chapter 10. In verse 12, the Eternal said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, that they may come upon the land of Egypt and eat every herb of the land, all that the hail has left. So completely taking away these early spring crops. The various sky deities, there were deities of air, of moisture, of sky, and they supposedly controlled the weather, but the loss of crops showed that they were completely incompetent before the true God. Gods of vegetation, gods of agriculture, gods of harvest, every single one of them shown to be useless. Now the locust-headed god was called Senehem. Now he was a minor god in one sense, but he was supposed to be protector against the ravages of pests. Wasn't able to do that here at all. Number 9, the darkness in Exodus chapter 10, verse 21. You see each of these growing to a climax, we might say, leading to a climax, now completely attacking the chief deity of the Egyptians, the sun god Amun-Ra. Then the Eternal said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, darkness which may even be felt. It's an interesting phrase. Darkness that might even be felt. Some commentators feel that this was such a moist, damp, dark feel that they couldn't even keep their candles lit or their lanterns lit. Now that would be an interesting thing if that were the case as well. Verse 22, Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. So when it's described as thick darkness, does that indicate it was this moist, damp, humid, clammy kind of a feel to it, which would be very, very unusual in Egypt. It wasn't just a matter of the lights going out. There was something about this darkness that intensified it, that made it all the more miraculous. So the sun god Amun-Ra, the principal deity of the Egyptians, was put to shame here. Pharaoh called himself the son of the sun. So he was supposed to be descended directly from Amun-Ra. So this attack on their supreme deity made complete sense, that God would have to take that god out, we might say, to show his power. And then, of course, the final plague. Sadly, the Egyptians still would not respond until the 10th plague was dealt. Chapter 11 and verse 4. Moses says, "Thus says the Eternal, about midnight I will go out into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the female servant who is in behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the animals." There was something significant about the people dying like animals. God is showing he has absolute control over life and death. Absolute control. Now, we understand in the plan of God something others don't. Some would say, well, how could you worship a God that killed all these innocent people? Well, number one, they weren't innocent. Number two, God can resurrect them and will resurrect them in a much better circumstance, in much less misunderstanding, in much less idolatry, and teach them his way. And they'll have an opportunity to live in a much better circumstance than they would have lived out their lives under these circumstances. So God is showing he has absolute control. It was an attack on the divinity of the gods, but also an attack on the divinity of Pharaoh, because he was supposed to be, again, the son of the sun, the S-O-N of the S-U-N. So it was Pharaoh's job to stay in good favor with all of the gods so they would bless Egypt. And the exact opposite was taking place. So he was powerless to prevent the death of his own son, along with all the animals. So God has complete control over life and death, and that is something that will need to be learned by individuals in the future as well. So God acted in a mighty manner to deliver ancient Israel from slavery in Egypt. But we have to ask, what is the point for us today? Are there other things that we can draw from these plagues, lessons for us today? I think there are. We've enumerated some of them as we've gone along, but I'll end today with these four important lessons that come to us from the plagues. Number one, God is drawing out a people from slavery. God is drawing out a people of slavery. As we approach the days of unleavened bread and the Passover, of course, we remember that Egypt is a type of sin, that Pharaoh is a type, a picture of Satan the devil. And we know that this world, the way of life in this world, goes on as if everything is just fine. And they need to be taught that God, no, is drawing a people out of that kind of emotional and mental and spiritual slavery into a completely different way of life. A second thing that we can learn from the plagues, God will act mightily on behalf of his people. God will act mightily on behalf of his people. These mighty acts of God are recorded to remind us that God will act on our behalf. He will rescue in his perfect time. He tells us we are his people. He will never leave us nor forsake us. He promises that. Christ himself said, "I will never leave you nor forsake you." A third lesson that we might draw from these plagues, no force can stand against God. No force can stand against God. No matter what obstacle we face, our God is more than able to see us through it, either to remove it, to push it out of the way, or to guide us through the middle of it. Whatever sin we might be entangled in, God is able to draw us out of it. Whatever challenges we face, God is able to work good in our lives because we love Him. So we turn to Him in total submission, and He will give us the help that He promises He will. And number four, God expects us to trust and to follow. God expects us to trust and to follow. One of the basic attitudes of conversion shown in the Scripture is submission. God requires that we submit to Him and follow Him out of spiritual Egypt, which means we must be on the move, we must be doing, we must be taking action. We will be shortly, if we have not started already, removing leaven from our homes, replacing it with what is unleavened. God expects us to trust and to follow, and of course to do. So we can and must overcome sin. God expects that we will exercise much effort in the struggle to be like Him. So brethren, as we prepare this year for the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, let's remember and apply the point of the plagues.